Strictly Sail and Kayak, located in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, has a lot to offer when it comes to the sailing and kayaking realm. From Hobie catamarans and Catalina yachts to a wide range of kayaks like Hobie, New Canoe, Feel Free, Three Waters, and Old Towns. They also carry products from companies like Yak Attack, Bending Branches, Torquedo, Amped Outdoor Batteries, and the list goes on. So if you're in the market for a new sailboat or kayak, reach out to my friends there for great prices and awesome customer service. Chances are, if you need it, they have it. Or they can order it and have it to you quick, fast, and in a hurry. So these guys have been doing this a long time. So they know their stuff. So give them a call at 513-984-1907 or visit their website at strictlysailinc.com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Freak is giant.
I don't want to get bit. Oh, yeah!
Okay, keep rolling.
I got him.
Keep reeling. Keep reeling.
You know, I mean, we like you guys, I think. And you said you're living in Southern West Virginia now, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, the conversation we started having with F1s, one of the biologists that we spoke to early on was from West Virginia. You know, he's like, you know, I love that you guys in Eastern Kentucky are doing this. It's near and dear to my heart because I'm from West Virginia. You know, I love to see them do more of this stuff there. Yeah. So, you know, I thought it was cool, you know, how we kind of, we got started with that conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like if you look at the introgression map, I guess, that they've put out several times this year, you know, we're just right on that fence line, man. You know, where it may work, may not work as far as the F1s go. You know, and we don't know enough yet, really. The Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife doesn't know enough. Neither does the West Virginia Department of Natural Resources. They don't know enough to say they'll work or they won't work. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. It's one of those things that's probably worth trying. I mean, all it can do is what, fail? And, well, I don't want to get too much into it yet, but I do want to introduce you. So, guys, welcome to the Evolving Angler Podcast. I want to introduce my guest here. We've already been kind of hitting on the topic. You guys are going to kind of figure out what we're talking about today. But I'm here with Jason Kenner, and he's a man that needs no introduction, especially if you're from Eastern Kentucky. Dude, I'd heard about you obviously well before you heard about me. But I'd heard about you. I'd heard your name before I even really knew, you know, that you were as big into fishing as you were. I think it was a couple years ago. There was a guy talking about Jason Kenner and fishing. And I just thought it was some dude just down the road that was real good at fishing. and then, you know, come to find out, I'm like, oh, yeah, why haven't I not heard of this guy? I felt like a jerk. But and I apologize that I don't know your full resume. I know you fished the MLF a little bit, at least
a little bit.
Yeah. And
as my dad duties allow. Right.
Oh, man, dude. Totally get it. Totally get it. I got a 6-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a wife that supports me, but I try not to abuse that. And I'm sure you're the same way. And
I'm abusing it this weekend. I won't lie to you. I'm headed to Lake Erie tomorrow. I go up there with my dad, so that makes it, I guess, a gray area topic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my daughter's playing volleyball in Lexington. My wife's actually a volleyball coach, built a really good volleyball program.
Nice. Nice.
My daughter's going to be a superstar, you know.
Yeah.
Hey. Third in the state in 3-pointers in basketball last year. She's talented, man.
Oh my gosh, dude. That's awesome.
12 threes. She hit 12 threes in one game. But yeah. So I'm skipping out on volleyball this weekend and I'm headed up to Lake Erie to go try and chase some smallmouth, you know.
What's the movie? The actor, I think he's dead now, but he was like, make it rain, and he couldn't make a shot.
That's me.
Yeah, that's me. I can't, dude. You could pick me up and set me right beside, hold me right beside the net, and I can't score. I'm terrible at basketball.
I told her, I said, Kylie, I didn't make 12 threes in my entire life, much less in one game, you know? So,
yeah, same, man, same. But, man, I appreciate you so much for coming on the podcast.
Sir, thanks for having me.
Yeah, hey, man, it's an honor. And I know with this weather we've got, and those of you listening, this will be about a week ahead, but or a week, you know, behind. But all the rain we've got here in Eastern Kentucky is just super sad. And I know we've been kind of bouncing around I know we've had some power issues, high water issues, and I've been trying to make sure that whenever we for sure get on here that I'm not going to lose power. God forbid we don't tonight. But it's finally great to have you on. And we're going to be talking about some stuff today that I'm really interested in learning myself. As I told you, I listened to the episode. Shout out to Eastern Outdoors Media Podcast. I know they don't get to put out a lot of stuff, but man, the episodes they do have are great. And they had you on talking about the F1 bass. And it really sparked my interest because, man, I didn't know a whole lot about it. And I started Googling a little bit. And you got to watch Google, you know, and I've got friends that are biologists, and I was just talking with them about it. And, you know, it seems like they're on the fence about it as well. Like, they're like, you know,
yeah,
we don't know if it'll work or not, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly. And the first person that we talked to is the same. He's like, hold up, these guys really don't know. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. And it's not that they're anti-F1s or that they're, right, you know, for it or against it. They just don't know. I don't know if they know obviously there's not enough data in Kentucky because they've never did it, as far as I know, you know, unless some, go ahead.
The twice, I think they gathered data on like four or five locations. One time they gathered data at a fish hatchery. And, you know, we've spoken, like you said, the biologists that we've spoken to on kind of the side, you know, out of the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife, always been like, you know, the Minor Clark fish hatchery, they found that they had, you know, 3% Florida genetics the one time they DNA tested. And so this is a fish hatchery. So if we take that and knowing that those fish got stocked in a lake for how long before they found out they were tainted with Florida genetics, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And that's kind of been our argument. Let's go get, you know, DNA is easy to come by these days. So we conducted a swab. We got 100 samples, I think 99 samples exactly, with cotton swabs. Did no harm to the fish. Should have those samples. We had hoped this week. It's looking like next week, obviously. But we can't wait to release that data. I have no indication of what that data says. We hope to find, you know, 3 to 5% Florida genetics. I think, you know, most of our fisheries, you could assume that you're going to find 3%-ish Florida genetics in your largemouth population. So what we kind of started with that was going that this isn't new. You know, a lot of people say hybrid and it scares people to death because it sounds like it's new. And, you know, where we're from in Eastern Kentucky, we've dealt with kudzu and invasive species. You know what I mean? So we don't want to introduce something that's going to be a problem.
Right.
And, you know, in looking at the F1s, nobody knows. But the thing about the F1s are they're an integrate. They're not necessarily a hybrid.
Okay.
The Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources classifies them as an integrate. They're the first I've seen actually use that term versus hybrid. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And for those who don't know exactly what a F1 bass is, I'm sure like me, you know, I just found out couldn't have told you what F1 was from a bluegill, you know, until I listened to that podcast. All I knew it was a bass, but
me neither, probably 16 months ago.
Yeah. So break that down. If you don't mind, for our listeners, I know it's a cross between a northern strain and a Florida strain bass, right? First generation. Okay.
First generation's 50-50, 50% Florida, 50% northern. And it takes the traits that we as bass fishermen desire. Those fish are said to be more aggressive in several studies. That's actually one thing they do agree on.
Okay.
Those fish, it's arguable that they grow faster, quicker.
Okay.
And you know, you have, in my opinion, you know, Nick, so you got a generation gap. You've got guys that learned it in 20, 30 years ago, and this has changed on their watch, in my opinion. And you said you did the Google search, which is exactly where I started. The pre maybe 2010, 2015 stuff that you find, it won't work. Florida genetics won't work in Kentucky, won't work, you know, north of the whatever line, won't work, right? Same battle in Oklahoma. They're kind of on the fence like us.
Yeah,
but they've started to experiment with F1s. You saw Grand Lake, I'm sure, and other cases.
Yeah,
but so you know, the thing is, we don't know. I mean, why not try? I think that's, you know, a conversation me and you've had before. You know, what do you have to lose at this point?
Yeah,
some of our lakes fish pretty bad in the summer. You know, you got a more aggressive, faster, potentially faster growing fish. You know, in Paintsville Lake, this is probably the same for a lot of the area. They have not stocked any new genetics whatsoever since 2009. So, you know, that's all, you know, those fish reproducing every year is our population of fish.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like you could almost make an argument, and bear with me. Maybe I'm a little bit crazy. If you if bass fishermen harmed or removed the larger, you know, genetic pure, those are the ones, the fish that got to 5 pounds are the ones that are most likely that we harmed and took out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hauling around in a live well, or, you know, mishandling, foul hooking them, you know, but sometimes you just hook it in the gut. I mean, it just is what it is. But I'm just saying, when you look at it from that, 13 years later, since they stocked, could our genetic pool be potentially weaker than it was when, you know, 13 years ago? I don't know. I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, I do too.
I've seen, you know, we looked at data on top of data, and I'm sure you've read most of that. But one of the things that we found, you know, Dewey Lake had a little turnaround. We felt like, now it's been hammered with pressure since, you know, I guess everybody in the area, you know, bass cigarettes aren't real cigarettes.
Yeah.
So guys have hammered Dewey, and Dewey's small. But Dewey had a little turnaround. But if you look back, I think he stocked with largemouth bass around 2017. So, and that's about, you know, what we found is it takes about 5 years to grow a 15 inch largemouth bass in Yates Fillet. That's current data.
Okay.
So what if you could cut that to 4 or even 3? What if at 5 years that bass is 2.5 pounds? You've changed the game for our little lakes. You know, we don't have a 60,000 acre Gunnersville. We've got more or less water ponds. You know, they manage ponds at Auburn where they do studies that are as big as Paintsville Lake. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you're a huge advocate for the area. I love that. I love that you're a huge advocate for the area. I love that you're being I don't want to say a front runner, because I know other people feel the way you do, but yes, I feel like you've kind of took the reins with this, as far as trying to promote our fisheries here in Eastern Kentucky. Now, I just moved from Central Kentucky, and I will say this. I said this before I moved, and I'll say this when I move back. Is it bad that I am sad about fishing this side of Kentucky? Like, I don't want to, yeah. I mean, I know there's good fishing here. I don't want to sound like that guy, and I'm not trying to like cause conflict, but man, it just seems like, and it may just be the way that everything falls, the way the cards fall is, man, there's a lot of good fisheries in Central Kentucky that I love fishing. And I knew when I moved back here, it just felt like we needed something, you know, and I love that you're kind of taking a range with this and trying to, you know, promote Paintsville and do things for Paintsville Lake that I love fishing. You know, I haven't fished in a couple of years, but I love fishing and I would
be beautiful lake.
Yeah. Oh, very beautiful. Very beautiful. And now they stocked that with trout, right? Or they did. I know they stocked tailwaters.
But now let me tell you something. One of, you know, we had 2 meetings with the Department of Fish and Wildlife with Commissioner Rich Storm and, you know, the biologists and they don't like to think that they would be putting trout in that bass would potentially eat. So, you know, it's, you know, everything's a double-edged sword with them. I don't know. It's going to be a battle. And, you know, one thing that people can do, you know, follow Anglers for Improving Opportunities. We have a website, anglersforimprovingopportunities.org. There's a Facebook page. We're almost up to 1,000 members.
I know you guys are going to be putting structure in a lake too here. Well, August 12th, I think it was.
Yes, sir. And we're organizing a 501(c) so that we can take, you know, monetary donations and people that donate, you know, we can give them a letterhead and, you know, they can get the tax benefits of that. So we elected, you know, officials this week, had our first meeting. We filed, you know, to be a 501(c), a nonprofit corporation in Kentucky this week. So, we're moving. It's just, it's process. Things take time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it's about like anything that's worth doing. You know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but
a lot more time than sometimes we hope, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, organizing structure and all this, we'd hope to do it in June initially. It just, things happen, you know, unforeseen circumstances, you know, everything moves slower after COVID, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Gosh, man. You know, it helped in a lot of ways not to get off on a rabbit trail, though. Like,
right,
when I moved from Eastern Kentucky, I was making 14-something, 15-something hours respiratory therapist. And right after COVID, they started making 28, which I don't do that anymore. I wish I did now, but, you know, it's like, man, there was a lot of, I guess, I want to say kind of good coming from it. But, I mean, honestly, if I had to choose whether we went through it or not, I'd been like, heck no.
Yeah, for real.
Real quick, I want something else I want to talk about. Real quick, the structure stuff you guys are doing, kind of do a rundown of that, how that's going to operate and how that's, because like I said, you guys are going to be putting structure into Paintsville Lake, which is, I think it's a very important thing on any lake is furthering that structure and replenishing that structure. Like, you know, the wooden stuff that breaks down over time, there's no oxygenation with it anymore. And so kind of what that event's going to consist of.
So a lot of our lakes are kind of getting to that, you know, that threshold, that period where some natural timber and things that were in it when they filled it up, you know, have deteriorated to the point that they're going to need replaced. You know, obviously, it's not feasible to go in and do that. You know, if we wait 10 years and we go in and do that, it's going to be impossible to do that in one season to, you know, bring it. So, and the way we've looked at this is if we went in for 10 years and we put 100 pieces of structure in for 10 years in a row, we put 1,000 pieces of structure, you know, into our lake. The PVC structures we're wanting to build, the Shelbyville cubes, you know, they're pretty sizable structures. So if you put 1,000 of those in our lake, you know, you may not see the difference in 1 year or 2 years, but, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road, you know, those things are habitat that our bass and our crappie and our bluegill and, you know, I guess every part of the population is using. But one of the things that we can't wait to do is we've mixed in some pallets. We're going to set some pallet structures too.
Okay.
Versus PVC. And we want to set a couple different things. And here's why. We want to go back with our forward facing sonar and we want to be able to compare or do our own study for what it's worth. You know, okay. Yeah. The wood's not going to last forever. The PVC, I guess, could last forever, but which one holds more fish? You know what I mean? So we want to study that part of it too, but you know, all in all, we want to look at everything we can that could potentially improve fishing in our area.
Yeah. You might be able to answer this kind of off subject again, but kind of on that structure subject. So I was told by a guy that there is, and I forget what he called it, but all right, say they dam up an area, reservoir, whatever, use Cave Run Lake for instance, mm-hmm. just as an example, whenever they dammed it up, that there is a period of time, I guess, where there's so much oxygen in the water that it can potentially produce a state record fish more so than any other time in that lake's life. Do you know anything about that?
Usually it's first 15 years, you know, any reservoir when they dam it up. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, the vegetation and the things that, you know, are already on the bank, you know, the life period that, you know, the area that they dammed up. But yeah, usually in the lake's first 15 years, like, you know, in Cedar Creek, you would think Cedar Creek, how old is Cedar Creek? Are you for sure?
I can't remember. I want to say my buddy Jay Wallen, he's fished it long time and he knows a lot about it, but I can't remember exactly when it,
newer. I know that, but yeah. Usually that 15 year period is when the biggest fish come.
I'm going to Google here. Cause I'm curious.
And you know, a lot of our lakes are out of that period of time, you know?
Yeah.
By a long shot.
This is not telling me anything. Let's see. I can edit this period out, but you got me curious now. It's not telling me a date when it was made. I will. Yeah, it's not very old. And man, there's some big bass come out of Cedar Creek. We're getting ready to have I'm tournament director with Bluegrass Kayak Anglers, and we're getting ready to have a kayak event on Cedar Creek Lake. And I'm excited about that. We're potentially have more people at this event than we will have most of our season. This will probably be second most people, because people want to fish Cedar and they want to catch that big bass. You know,
I would love to see DNA data on Cedar Creek. I would love to see, you know, there's no way those are all pure Northerns. That's all I'm saying.
Man, I've seen some monsters come out of there. 23, 24. Giants. Oh my God.
Yatesville Lake. No way. Yatesville Lake's pure Northerns.
Yeah. My biggest bass come out of Yatesville probably 12 years ago, 10 years ago, like that.
But why wouldn't you go in and do studies on it? Let's just say your best and maybe your worst. Why wouldn't you go in and do, at this point, most states have, you know, probably a filing cabinet full of DNA studies on some of their reservoirs.
Yeah.
We've got very little, like it's like one manila folder full, you know what I mean? So why wouldn't you go in and test your best lakes and say, okay, well, you know, maybe you find out that 25% Florida genetics, these things are, I don't know. I'm just saying, why wouldn't you want that data?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and since we counseled them so early this year, why didn't they roll out this year and say, hey, we're going to go DNA sample 5 lakes. Heck, you know, I'm, some movement.
That would be interesting to see some of that. It really would.
Yeah. I mean, how many lakes, what lakes would you, what lakes grow the biggest bass that you can think of in Kentucky?
Cedar Creek. Yeah. I've seen some giants on Del Hollow, but I don't know. Agree. I don't know if it would be labeled some of the biggest. I mean, I've definitely seen, I think it was a giant largemouth. Was it 10 pounds or 11 pounds caught earlier this year?
I met in a BFL this spring.
Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah. Giant.
Of course, it's only one, but man, that's, it lets you know there's, yeah, you know, there's more than one in there.
And then, you know, you have the situation in Harlan County, and I'm sure you read, you know, where the state record came from a few years ago.
Oh, Woods, was it Woods Creek or what was that?
Yeah. One? Yeah. And it's basically, I mean, it is a pond, right? I mean,
yeah, it's small, tiny. Small.
But supposedly when you, you know, this is per Facebook comment, but when you dig into all those situations, they have, the bass have questionable origins. How about that? So supposedly that lake was initially stocked with Florida string, pure Florida string. And in Kentucky, one thing that we found out through our research is there are multiple private, you know, all these lakes that we want to improve are public, but there are multiple private reservoirs. There's some in Western, there's some in Central Kentucky that have been successfully growing F1s in Kentucky for 10 years.
Mm. Wow.
You know, so why not try it?
Yeah. You know? Well, and okay, so here's my next question then. And I'm sure you're more familiar with this because you talked to a lot more people about this. What is some of the backlash? Is it just they don't want to spend the money? Is it they worry about habitat? Is they worry about the aggressiveness of maybe going to outcompete? Or are they worried that it would be a waste of money because the further generations wouldn't be as big? Or like, what is it? What's the backlash that
I honestly can't answer that. I wish I could, because that would let me know what part we need to work on. There's like when you ask that question straight to the biologist or it's, there's no answer. They just don't answer those questions. They just move on. And you know, we even had in our last meeting, one of our members got frustrated because he said, we have this private lake, you know, 4 or 5 acres, whatever, you know, we're going to put, let's put these fish in that lake and let's just do the study there. And they wouldn't even respond to the question. They had no interest. So, you know, I don't know, but on our side, you know, a couple of things that ours, if we can get them to grant us the permit, which we kind of hope with our data reveal, that'll give us some leverage to possibly get the permit to stock these fish.
Yeah.
Our county government, they found a way to pay for some of this. We've got multiple means, we think, to pay to have these fish stocked in our lake. So we don't, as far as fish stocking, that won't cost the state of Kentucky a dime in our case.
Well, I would gladly, and this is just me talking, I can't speak for every bass angler, but if you are a serious bass angler.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how many there are in the state. Millions of people fish across the country every year. I would gladly throw another $5 or $10 into my fishing license if I knew 100% that $5 or $10 was going to stock F1s or at to least, research. Yeah. Yeah. To find out if it's worth it or not, you know,
totally agree. Absolutely. That's the first time I've heard that presented like that. I love that. I agree.
I'm not getting with anything. Any guy that's serious about fishermen or serious about fishing at all. I don't think we wish harm on our waters, you know, on our fisheries. No. If something's going to harm it, I would like to know. I don't want to do it. And I would admit if I was wrong about something, but I think not knowing, man, I mean, I would just be curious about at least finding out. And if there's funds to do it outside of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, if that's one thing maybe they're worried about, I don't know. But
So one of our things, man, has been, and their argument is, okay, Paintsville Lake's overpopulated, and then you have those biologists that say, well, it doesn't matter what your genetics are if you got an overpopulated lake. And, you know, me and you both fished a bunch, so we have an opinion on that.
Yeah.
And I think our opinion matches up with what every other angler in the area said. They said, okay, you can tell me your electrofishing boat, you're shocking up, I think it was 130 per fish per hour in one instance. I think they said 190 in another. Number one, anglers in Kentucky don't trust their data. And here's a good reason why. But think, you know this, if you go to Paintsville Lake and it's an overpopulated population, man, we should be able to go out there and take our kids and catch 8 or 10, you know, 8-inch bass.
Yep.
to the point that you got tired of catching. Do you know anybody that's ever described Paintsville Lake as that way? Not recently, you know.
Yeah.
It's tough to get a bite, single bite for an adult and an avid angler. So it's hard for these guys to say, hey, you know what, that lake's overpopulated, have a total fish removal. But now, Nick, if you back it up even further than that, when this started in January, we initially asked the question. We said, you know, why can't we stock F1s? And they said, we have a pure northern strain population. Now, when you follow the timeline of all this, we're kicking over stones. I don't know if we're making progress. We're kicking over stones. You know, they said, we have a pure northern strain population. So we made a post on our page, and, you know, sometimes posts are made intentionally to ruffle the right feathers, right? And no. We made a post, well, a retired, I don't want to give him up, but a retired Department of Fish and Wildlife guy who would know, said, hey, there is DNA evidence. We do have Florida genetics in Kentucky. We've known this for 20 years. You know, make an open records request down there, and they'll have to come forward with this data. No. So turns out that data that proved our claim, they said they had a pure northern strain population, but the data that proved our claim was buried in a filing cabinet somewhere. So then turn around 3 months later, okay, well, we don't have a pure northern strain population, but we still can't stock F1s because our lake's overpopulated. So I don't know.
So
it's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
So my question is, and just being I'm a ground level thinker, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So if I take a bass and we wanted to stock 6 to 8 inch, that's what we wanted to stock. We wanted to start with a larger fish because we both know big bass eat small bass.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes in our local lakes, in terms of a 5 or 6 pounder, the best meal it could have is a 10, 12 inch bass.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until all of our research this winter that, one of the preferred. But nonetheless, that being the case, if I start with an 8 inch F1 and it grows to 11 or 12 inches, it should be eating a lot of those bass, I would think, at some point, you know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you study like some of the private lakes. We've actually spoken to guys who are on the board at some of these local lakes. We have decent information, but we just don't want to give those guys up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd be happy to tell you off the record. You know what I mean? But yeah. They are even to the point they are ready to stock pure Florida strain. Now the science is to the point they even make temperature tolerant Florida strain largemouth bass. You know, ooh, the temperature tolerant part makes it, that's a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, for where you can stock those fish.
See, that's what I was curious about too, not to interrupt you, but was
go
like,
ahead, man.
Was
I'll like,
well, no, you're good. I was just wondering like, if like one of the arguments would be, well, we're too far north, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, then at that point you couldn't put that in that argument into consideration, you know?
And one of the things that the state fisheries biologist said straight back to us was, and this is his only response, like it was kind of cut and dry. It was frustrating because, you know, we had science that, you know, full on debated what he believed. But he said we studied pure Florida's, or he didn't say we studied pure, he said we studied Florida strain largemouth bass at the Minor Clark Fish Hatchery. And it was like, I just shut the case, it's over, you know, we're not going to talk about it anymore. And, you know, we even pointed out, we were like, with all due respect, sir, you know, we're not talking about pure Florida's, we're talking about an F1, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They've shown to survive further north than pure Florida's. He wouldn't talk about it again,
man.
So it's a brick wall, but we're going to push that wall with data. You know, when we get our DNA data, and let's say you had, let's face it, guys, please don't move fish. We don't want you to move fish. It's, you know, the Alabama bass, the worst thing we could have, a lot of people don't understand, if they accidentally brought Alabama bass to Kentucky, you know, there are situations where they have proven that every bass in the lake would be 4 inches long and then within 6 to 8 years.
Really?
You know, so we don't want Alabama bass in our lakes. So please don't move fish.
Explain that to me now, because I mean, I've heard of that, but I didn't know why. So, or like, what's so bad about the Alabama bass? And that's me being ignorant again. There's a lot I don't know about genetics.
About Alabama bass, but I know, just like you said, they outcompete.
Okay.
Pretty much every native species, and they do grow fast. Like a lot of guys are like, man, these Alabama bass grow fast, but you know, bass are considered invasive in some parts of the world, but Alabama bass in our lake would be considered invasive. They would give bass a really bad name, you know.
Yeah. I can imagine a lot of those getting loose, or, you know, somebody turning them loose in Cumberland Probably depleting the smallmouth population too.
We know how many people do you know that probably brought bass back? They went to Gunnersville, caught a 6-pounder out there in Paintsville Lake now. I mean, you know they've done it.
I've had conversations with guys like, dude, this little lake here, Grants Branch. I'm sure you've heard about it. There's been 12, 13 pounders caught out of Grants Branch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, were those just regular northern, like after I got to learning about F1s and all that, I'm like, man, are those just straight northern largemouth, or I would guarantee there's some kind of Florida genetics.
My mom said exactly. That's how my mind is too now, man. Every time I see one of those fish, and it seems like one of those that just looks like, you know, one of those freakosauruses, is it looks different. Their color scheme's different, their eyes are different, they just look different.
Yeah. You know, I seen a picture of one. It was like 11 pounds come out of Grants Branch, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, it looks like
a dinosaur.
Yeah. It's like, I know it's technically catch and release up there, and I know guys who've hauled bass out of there by the ton. And speaking of overpopulation, that lake is highly overpopulated with bass. And I know this because I have LiveScope. And
yes, sir.
I thought I was on trees. I was looking at crappie, schools of 50 and 100 crappie. I would throw a little swim bait down there, boom, 8-inch bass, crappie jig, 8-inch bass.
But you can't do that on Paintsville.
No. That's what I was going to tell you. I was like, what I mean? So, you go to Grants Branch and throw a crappie jig, you're going to catch a million small bass if you go to Grants Branch.
Perfect example. And you can't do that on Paintsville.
No.
It's hard for some of these guys to believe that it's overpopulated, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there's guys that argue that too with Cave Run. And I've seen firsthand, even out there bow fishing at night. I only did it one time, but I was curious, went out with some guys. They turned the lights on. Dude, the amount of bass that was on Cave Run was stupid. And I know guys that will argue with me. I had a guy argue with me, told me I was an idiot, that there was no bass on Cave Run. He don't waste his time, musky ate them all, and just went on. It's like, dude, I love bass fishing that lake. Not that I can catch 5-pounders on it every day, but there's a lot of big bass. My buddy Cameron caught his personal best 6-pound just this year, a six and a half pound, I think, this year. There's some big bass on there. Guys catch them musky fishing all the time. But the amount of small bass was insane. Everywhere we went on that lake, man, it was 8-10-inch bass all over.
Yeah.
And Department of Fish and Wildlife even told people, they was like, you all need to start keeping them and eating them. If you go up there with a Ned rig, you could slay the smallmouth or the small bass. I have. Or a crappie jig, but to get decent sized bass up there, you can. It's just a little bit tougher. It's obviously not a Cumberland. It's not a Del Hollow. But there's some nice smallmouth up there, nice largemouth. But dude, I could have almost argued too that there was not a lot of bass until I went out bow fishing, and every 5 foot there was 2 or 3 10-inch bass. I mean, that's where
I think, stupid. Like, I mean, why can't you go and dump, you know, if you may dump in a class that outcompetes a native class in your lake, but why can't you go dump some new genetics in? What you got to lose? I mean, maybe those are the test tube bass, and they're a little dumber and a little easier to catch. So we'll dump 1,000. I'm just throwing a crazy number out there. 1,000 of those in every year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just saying we're talking about a young kid going and having a better experience because they caught more fish, you know, or that 3-pounder that young kid caught is potentially being a 5-pounder. I just think that in itself is reasoning enough for the state to take a hard look at this stuff, you know, because every county in Eastern Kentucky is throwing money at adventure tourism in some kind of way. Yeah. In most of those instances, they got to build trails, they got to build this, some type of infrastructure. We got the lake, man. We just want them to back the stocking truck up and give us a chance, you know.
Yeah.
See if we grow a few more 5-pounders, right?
Well, look at how many people fit. And I know Cedar Creek was built for, like, as a fishing lake, as opposed to, like, Cave and all these other lakes that were built for, you know, I guess, water regulation and, you know, and things like that. But look at how many people. Dude, people come from all over to fish Cedar Creek because they know. Two buddies that live in Maryland that have been wanting to come down and fish Cedar Creek for years. They've been dying to come down fishing. They've heard about it. You know, and it's just like, if we could have a pretty good fishery here in Eastern Kentucky to, I don't want to say compete, you know, but just something to kind of bring people in. It's a win-win thing, I think. If you get good genetics in a lake and you got tourism coming in, you know, this is not exactly a job, super populated job area, you know, bring some, some revenue in with tourism and other things, you know. I mean, I don't think it could hurt.
A lot of our guys said, you know, hey, if we did this for 10 years and we're right back where we started in 10 years, then we're fine with that. You know what I mean? Like, we don't believe we will be, but you know, and the guys that we've talked to that have, you know, some of these, that have seen some of these private lakes and managed the populations in Kentucky, they said their population changed. They said, you know, in their private lake situation, their fishing game clubs that used to be able to go out and catch, you know, 100 fish before F1s.
No.
And you'd occasionally have a three and maybe every now and then have a five. And they said when they put, they didn't remove a bunch of bass, they didn't do any of that. And in fact, one of the recommendations when it came to controlling their crappie population, which is getting overpopulated, they wanted to stock more F1s. You know what I mean? So, but they said now their population, you don't go out and you catch the numbers of bass. You catch 12 to 15 bass, but, you know, they're 3 to 5 pounds.
No.
You know, it's not rare to go out and catch a 5 pounder every other trip out. And when they said that to me, it's like, whoa, a 5 pounder in Kentucky every other trip out. I know guys that would, you're the same as me, dude. What? I'm not worried about gas. Go put it in the truck. Let's go.
Yeah. People don't understand too. You know, you know, we've fished for a long time. You got guys that call a 2.5 pounder, a 5 pounder. I've caught a bunch of 5 pounder, blah, blah, blah. 5 pound ain't nothing. People don't realize you hold a 5 pound bass. That is a good size bass, man. I caught I think it's 5.5 pounds. I've yet to break the 6 pound mark. And my buddy's killing me to come to Cedar and fish. I haven't fished Cedar much and I lived out there. I'm wanting to break the 6 pound mark. But I was like, man, I caught a 5.5 pounder smallmouth down on Del Hollow earlier or back in December. And I was like, man, I said, I just couldn't believe it. You know, just to me, I mean, it's wasn't the longest fish I'd ever caught, but it was one of the heaviest I ever caught. I was like, man, to a true 5 pounder, I can say it because I'm a hillbilly. Your hillbilly 5 pounder, which is 2.5, 3 pounds. A 5 pound bass is a good size bass, and I would catch them all freaking day long. To know there's a fishery like Cedar, dude. Every other time you go out, you have a really good chance of catching 5 pounder. If there was a fishery like that over here, man, I'd be hitting it all the time.
Me too. And instead, I'll be honest with you, you won't see me fishing locally a lot. June, July, August. You know, maybe a little early June. This year is a little bit slower, but I'll save my money and travel Lake Erie and fish, man. It's just, I got a lot of better chance of, you know, catching some quality fish. And that's me. I'm different in that way. I'll go fish for a weekend and take 1 6-pounder. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I want a big fish. That's what gets me going, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's funny, you know, you said like my personal best was a 7.2 that I caught at Paintsville Lake in 2013. Nice. It was my personal best until 2018-ish. But I got to tell you that. I catch this fish on spinnerbait up the head of the lake. Do you know where Upper Sand Lick is in Paintsville Lake?
I don't.
There's a little rocky point. It's exactly where they should be, right? I mean, anybody that's ever bass fished, like, they should be right there. Caught that fish there. It was, like you said, that was the biggest bass I'd ever seen in my entire life. Like, I watched it eat that spinnerbait, and I mean, it looked like a muskie's mouth, you know, just in hell, you know what I mean? Like, you don't see bass that big if you fish Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then 2 years ago, we went to my buddy, got a couple buddies we travel with. You got a lot of those guys, and we go to some cool places. We went to Gunnersville in February. Gunnersville in February is probably one of my favorite places. Pulling a rattle trap like everybody else, right? Everybody fish in Kentucky goes down there and Libbles crankbait, chuck them wide for 3 days, catch 835. And when that 835 rolled over, it was me and Cash Daniel. When that 835 hit that fish and rolled over, I got it on video, and Cash like, coach. I mean, like, we both knew, just like you said, people that see an 8 pound fish would call it a 12 pound fish, you know?
Yeah.
The way they move in the water, the sound, I mean, the whole deal is different, you know? And then we went to Chick that fall and it ruined me, and I'll forever just throw money at Chick, you know, like going to the Chick did to me what you do when you go to the casino and you win the first time.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the time, you know, So at Chick, I had a 750 and an 815 in the East Kentucky Tournament Trail Classic in the same day. And I had another fish that size. You don't have to believe me. But it missed the frog and hit it with its belly like 10 feet in front of the boat. So I got a great look at it, you know.
Wow.
And anyhow, so yeah, I'll be forever chasing Chickamauga gold for the rest of my life. Gosh, I've taken trips since then, Nick, that I've spent 3 days and not caught a fish.
Well, my first trip down, my first and only trip down was here recently. You might have seen the video where I flew my drone into the water, but I don't know if you've seen that, but that I had to dive in and catch
it. I can relate to that. I've been there.
If you lost a drone in the water?
My birthday 3 years ago, I was coaching high school football. I was in a hurry to get to practice. I had to go out and fish a little bit before I got, you know, I had to go to practice, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was flying it on Dewey Lake, and, you know, they don't like cold weather. I turn it on. I'm that guy. It says, batteries need warmed up. Don't take off. You know, here it goes. Man. So it goes up and it flies for a few minutes and it starts bobbing.
Oh no.
It's beside my boat and I'm just by the launch ramp, right there at Swimming Pool Hall. So it's deep. It's not that deep. That thing falls, hits the water, sinks all the way to the bottom, but I could see it down there on the bottom. So I jumped in, walked around, you know, picked it up, threw it back in the boat. Yeah. I've been there.
Did it work after that?
I had to dry it out and I had to get a new camera. Yes, it worked. Had to change the part out, but.
Nice.
What about yours? Did yours work?
So yeah. So initially, I got it back into the kayak and got back in my kayak and it was working all right, but I wanted to you know, turn it off if there was any damage. Yeah. I wasn't sure. We fish all day. We get back to the truck and I try to turn it on and it's just going beep, 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 beep. Won't do anything. And I thought my remote is shot. And I never tried the rice trick. My buddy's like, open it up a little bit, throw, you know, saturate it in rice, keep it overnight. I did that and dude, it worked the next day. But then like a week later, I took it out on Cave and did the same thing and tried to land it on my kayak while I was out on Cave Run. And the drone hit and I jumped to catch it on the front of my kayak and I did, but then I dropped the remote in the water. So I had to get, or my controller. So I had to get my controller out again. And that time it was toast. But the cool thing is that the drone was like $1,500. It's I guess total with, I got four batteries and everything is around $1,600. But it's the DJI Mavic, or is the Air 2S, I think. Yeah, the Air 2S.
Well, I've got there too. Yeah, I love that one.
And the drone is expensive, but the controller, $100 on eBay. And so I ordered a controller for it and it was fine. I just had to resync it. Awesome. But yeah, so everything's fine now. I've been flying it around like crazy. But so Chick, my first trip down, three casts from the ramp. I launch from the ramp. I take my time. I drop my motor in the water, troll motor in the water, and I'm standing fishing, throwing a jackhammer. That would have been my first fish on a jackhammer. Like, there's no shame in my body. I have thrown a jackhammer, I don't know how many times, and never caught a fish on it. People do, and I just not hold my mouth right. And I thought I was hung in grass, you know, because everybody's like, oh, you got to throw jackhammers in that grass down there. I was like, heck yeah. Okay. Sounds good. And I'm ripping this thing through grass and I thought I'd get hung in grass. And for a split second, I stop reeling and I go to just do this little, you know, thing to flick my rod to try to get it through the grass. And then this monster mouth, it would have been my PB, comes up and it just looks like a bucket. And there goes my jackhammer. And I'm like, daggone it, you know, and I'm yelling. I don't know how big it would have been, but it would have been over six. Like I told my buddy, Paul, I said, I don't want to be that guy that exaggerates, but it was definitely my personal best. Would it have been seven? Could have been, but it was definitely bigger than five and a half. And the rest of the day, I caught one bass. My other buddy, I had two guys with me. Another one of our buddies caught one and another buddy caught two. It was terrible. And I'm like, man, I don't know.
It's the toughest lake on earth. Those may be the most educated bass in the eastern half of the United States.
Somebody else told me that. They said, you're getting ready to go fish the most educated bass you're going to find. That was their exact words. Yeah, man.
They are. It's crazy. But now when you hit it right and those things feed, it's like nowhere else. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. You know, they always talk about those bats making noise and the right one makes noise. I've seen it. I know. Man. And I'll pray God chasing that experience for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So you doing a lot of fishing right now?
I don't fish any local derbs really in the summer. I've done some BFLs and I tinker in that as much as, you know, allows. I, you know, I got a great day job, and you know, I've got this stuff on the side going with my JK Multimedia stuff, and
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just keeping all that on ground, and then, you know, like we were talking about our kids and all that, and you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, health and wellness cooperates. And you know, when my, I told my wife, I said, when my 14-year-old is out of high school, I'm gonna go after it, you know, legit. In the meantime, I'm gonna try to get some experience on the bodies of water that I think, you know, I need experience on. You probably noticed that if you've watched any of my videos, I'm traveling to the, I'm gonna try to go to OHIV in January. So, you know, we're just
nice.
We're gonna travel, we're gonna learn, and you know, it's strategic. It's not, you know, some of the BFLs and things that I'm fishing, you know, there's a plan, but it's a long-term plan, you know. I gotta raise some kids first.
yeah, for sure.
Bass fishing's expensive, man. It'd be hard to do both, you know. I mean,
yeah, I couldn't imagine being on drugs and trying to bass fish.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And have kids. Hey, you'd have to choose. I mean,
couldn't do it. Reason I asked, I put you on the spot here and ask you a couple good baits to be throwing right now, if you're willing to share. You don't have to go in specifics, but
locally, or where are we going here?
Let's do locally, since I get a lot of listeners locally. Let's say Kentucky. Let's say you had to fish, not necessarily right now conditions, because everything's flooded out over here, but let's just say standard summer conditions, water temps 80 degrees, surface temps 80 degrees, 81.
You got to go with the top water early in the morning, right? A pop R.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, you know, I mean, Spook. I love clear Spook, the Spook Junior.
Okay.
I'd be throwing a little spinnerbait. That's just, I'm going to take it out of the package and tweak it. Maybe put a swim bait on there and take the skirt off. You know, by this time of the year, we were talking about educated bass. They've all seen them, right? Try to give it something a little different. You know, there's new innovations in blades.
Okay.
Some of the new blades vibrate, you know, a lot more than, so, I mean, I don't know. Just, I'm going to be different if I can. A wacky rig sometime, you know, I think you're typical. I'm hearing guys that are, you know, doing crazy stuff with live scope. So, you know, it's a fun time to be in bass fishing, right? Watching this stuff evolve and what we thought we always knew and what we thought were the bass always were. And then comes live scope and we all start questioning things that we thought we knew.
Well, I don't have it anymore. But it taught me a lot. But dude, I know guys that fish a lot of tournament trails that haven't won a tournament since they got it. You know, does it help you understand bass? Absolutely. Is it as big a tool to win a tournament? It could be, you know, but I think it's all up to the angler, even though you might have live scope. Dude, I could sit there and look at fish all day long. I couldn't get them to bite crap. You know?
Hey, I'll tell you this too, man. Like people make it out to where it's like, okay, I'm scanning this water and boop, 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 cast 50 feet. It's right here. No, it's not. Yeah. I wish it was that. It may be that way in a few years, but you know, we were on St. Clair, and St. Clair right now is most definitely a live scope. If this is live scope in a lake as there is.
Drop shot.
You stand for those fish, you see them, like you said, drop shot, boom, hit them in the head, and smallmouth. The brown fish are dumber than the green fish. I think we'll agree with that.
Yeah.
The brown fish will swim straight to it and eat it. You can watch them swim to it. You can watch them eat it and set your hook based on what you see or what you feel, either one. So in those instances, you know, it's definitely awesome, you know.
Yeah.
But certain days, you know, the sunlight changes. I love smallmouth fishing when the sun's high, middle of the day. I think that's the best bite. I'm 25 years on Lake Erie, and this is just my Jason Kenner's theory. It's probably not worth anything. But when it's cloudy, you have to go to that reaction bite. But what I found interesting with live scope is how those smallmouth relate to the bottom at high, you know, light periods versus the cloud period. Last week or 2 weeks ago on St. Clair, we found that when it got cloudy, you know, not only did it shift to a reaction bite or a crankbait bite, but also that those fish would sink down in that grass just a little bit. You know, we were fishing that barely 12 inch, what they call that, cabbage. They got a name for it.
Yeah.
I'm terrible with my grass names.
It's
about 12 inches off the bottom. So you could just kind of see their backs on the live scope. You know, it's a terrible example with my hands, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in that way, it was not easy to see fish, you know, on the high sunlight days, you could see them. You could be like, man, that's a little one. Don't cast that. That's, you know, that's a walleye. That's a perch, you know, because when you fish up there, you see all those fish. So you learn to differentiate what they look like. It's an interesting time, man, to watch all this evolve.
And I've made a mistake, too, with live scope. I would go over areas where I was like, man, there has to be fish here. but I'm not seeing any. And you know, with LiveScope, they can, when they get down those rocks, you may not even see them.
Nope.
You know, and I think back now, places that I skipped over, I was like, well, there's no fish here. I was like, man, I should have been casting down there at least to see if I could get some kind of reaction, something come up out of those rocks to even look at my bait. You know,
I mean, in the BFL, I fished on St. Clair. My co-angler had, and the same thing happened to me with me and Bryce McDonald went out 2 days before that. I think Bryce had 18 pounds himself. You know, I caught as many fish, if not more than he did. And I wasn't live scoping. I was just kind of, you know, following along where he was, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be 20 feet from him. You know, he'd throw his drop shot and I'd 20 feet away, kind of, you know, just in my mind, kind of testing that theory. And so, like I said, same thing happened to me on tournament day. The guy in the back of the boat had five fish before me. He wasn't throwing the flatworm that everybody's apparently worn out. So I got to change tactics. But we know how to do with baits over time.
For sure, man. For sure. Well, man, listen, I appreciate you. And I'd love to have you back on, especially once you get the results of that DNA. When you said it's going to be, you don't know yet.
We're working with Stephen Barden from Major League Fishing. He told me it would be this week. He's super busy, so I'm sure that's a little part of it. So I'm hoping, you know, middle of next week we'll have something going.
Well, as soon as you find out, man, let me know, and I'll bring you back on, even if it's in another episode. Obviously, if I'm with somebody, I would like to bring you on at least to give us that heads up, kind of like what y'all found out, and our listeners can kind of get that info. Because it's very interesting to me. Like I said, man, I'm not going to sit here and act like a biologist. I don't know.
No, me neither.
But I think if the only, like I said, the only thing that I've got is we don't know. And that's from guys that I've asked. I think it's worth at least maybe checking into. And I may be wrong, you know, but I think it's worth, in my mind, it's worth checking into because it can only improve the fishery. I think in worst case scenario, it just goes back to like it was, but
yeah, we start right back where we started.
Yeah. So, but, Mr. Kenner, sir, I appreciate you. And,
thanks for having me, man. I've talked your leg off. You get me started on one of those tangents and I don't hush.
Dude, I love it. It's good to have you on and I can't wait to hear the results of that. And those of you listening, be looking out for that. I'll put that into the description of the next episode that I get that information from you on. I'll be sure to put that in the info of the episode so you guys can check that out. But once again, man, appreciate you and hope you have a good evening, man. Stay dry.
Let me give a quick shameless plug if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Just dropped a new YouTube video over on my channel. You can find my channel easiest by searching Jason Kenner One. I'm on every social media platform at Jason Kenner Fishing. You know, we're trying to do some cool stuff with Anglers for Improving Opportunity. So, you know, if you get a chance, check out, follow, like all those pages.
For sure. And do you have TikTok?
Yes, sir. At Jason Kenner Fishing.
Do you twerk on there like everybody else?
Nah, you'll be disappointed. I just make stupid fishing videos, right?
Oh man, it cracks me up. I've rant so bad about TikTok. I have a TikTok, but it's like my fourth account because I've been banned from fishing content. And then like all these little kids get on there and twerk, and it's like, really, you know, and I get banned. Yeah. But anyway, I will rant about TikTok until it shuts down. But I have a TikTok, but I hate it. But it's a good social media platform. Everybody's on it. And so, but man, I appreciate you and I'll let you get back to your family and all that. As I said, stay dry. Man, Eastern Kentucky's getting hammered with rain. Yes, we only got a lot more coming. I think it's going to rain on and off till Tuesday. It's craziness. Craziness. Crazy.
Don't need any more.
Yeah. Done with it. Been wanting to fish Tug River since I moved back. It's been a month and a half, and I haven't even been able to fish it because it's been muddy the entire time. But anyway, all right, man. Hey, you have a good evening. And for those of you listening, love you, neighbor. Go catch some fish. Okay.